From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Have you done your bulb shopping yet? It's ordering time, both for fall blooming treats like colchicum, which you can only buy now if you hurry, and for the ever wider assortment of fall planted, spring into summer blooming species. Ken Drews and I both have been making lists of bulbs we once grew but no longer have and want to replenish, or of ones we have but want to add more to improve the visual impact, and also some new-to-us goodies. Plus, we'll talk about when and how to divide those narcissus that might be blooming less lustily than they used to after many years in the ground. So more in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, offering 30 new seed varieties for 2024. Professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Regular listeners all know Ken Drews, longtime friend and author of 20 gardening books, who gardens in New Jersey, and he's my co-host several times a year in our virtual garden club series of online classes. His extensive gardens are loaded with exceptional plants, including a diversity of bulbs, our topic today. So welcome as always, Ken. Good to talk to you. Hello.
Hi, Margaret. Every time you say, oh, let's talk about bulbs, and I end up doing a little research, and I buy everything I see.
So are you charging me then? Is that what you're trying to tell me? You're sending me a bill?
That's a good idea. You know, you said making a list, and every year I think about making a list, and I really don't ever do it. But this year I took pictures.
Oh.
You know, specifically to remember, I would like to buy that, or I wish I had that, or I need more of that. So I actually had a photographic list.
Oh, that's a great idea, actually, because with things like in certain areas I have in the front of beds or borders, you know, I might have a few remaining of some little treasure that I had a lot more of years ago, but, you know, the bed's gotten a little wider and the other things in it have gotten bigger and the bulbs have maybe diminished. And if I had taken a picture, I'd know exactly where and what.
Well,
and now, yeah.
You completely set me up.
Oh, sorry.
I've got, there's a patch of Narcissus pseudo-narcissus, which is a species that grows in Europe, and it grows in England and in Wales. And it's the subject of, well, it's in William Robinson's book about wild gardening. And it's in Wordsworth's poem, I wandered lonely as a cloud beside the lake beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze, about the golden daffodils. So it's a small daffodil, and it's very early. It starts to bloom in March. And this year it went on, we had a cool spring. It went on for over a month. But I've noticed that this patch, which used to sort of naturalize, you know, grow as if it was natural and got larger and larger, hasn't gotten any larger. And it's doing okay. But I planted it under a sapling of a weeping katsura, which is now a gigantic tree. So even though it blooms and gets ripe pretty much before the leaves come out, it's, you know, it needs to be divided to be more healthy and to spread a little more. But also, I need to move some of it to a sunnier spot.
Yeah. And even what you were saying about like the sapling turned into a big tree, I mean, even root competition can just be, you know, this unseen sort of something that's outpacing the needs of the bulbs, you know, that are among the big roots now, you know, in terms of for nutrients and moisture and whatever. So, well, we're going to talk about dividing for sure. I think first let's do a little sort of virtual shopping or lusting after things. I mean, when you got to your place, when you guys started making the garden there, how many years are you, do you have that house now?
About 30 years.
Yeah. So, and I'm even a little longer than that where I am. Were there bulbs when you got there? Were there any that you remember, you know, in the existing place?
It's funny because I know we're going to talk about some fall blooming things soon, but there were hardly any bulbs. And then there was a surprise about this time of year when the lycoris, somebody had, in this place, the people who lived here last and before them, you know, for years hadn't done anything. I mean, this place was a mess, but lycoris, sometimes called naked ladies, or now they're calling it mystery bulb or something. But they popped up, surprise, pink flower, lily-like flowers on long stems. And we had them for a few years and then they disappeared because before we raised the wall a little bit, as you know, we had floods and a lot of things didn't make it through the floods.
So the wall along the sort of river stream next
right,
to you?
The fast branch of the river. This garden's on an island in a small river.
Right.
And we used to have lots of floods twice a year at least.
Yeah.
And a lot of plants don't like that.
Right. Well, especially bulbs that they want to have usually a dry rest period during their dormancy. You know, they don't want to rot during that time. It's interesting that you say that the surprise lilies or whatever we're calling the lycoris, I think it's lycoris squamigera or something is the species. That was what I inherited also. And there's a clump in the backyard on the hillside and there's a clump in the front yard. And every year they still surprise me because I completely forget because they're one of those things that has no foliage except at a certain moment in the life cycle. You know what I mean? Much of the year there's no foliage. So it's not like you see the clump and then the flower arises from the clump and then you always see the leaves after. And you know what I mean? It's
I do.
Yeah, so it is a surprise. And they're just so tough, apparently. I mean, except when they live next to a river that floods. and I mean, so I didn't plant them. And so they've got to be at least 35 plus years old and who knows. So it's wonderful. And, you know, it's pink is not something I would have chosen, but it makes me happy. I just laugh every time, you know, up they come and there they go. And you know, I enjoy them. And, you know, it's in August usually. So kind of fun.
It's like, you mentioned that, you know, you don't see them and you don't think about it, but which makes me think of the colchicum.
Right.
Because I do see those in the spring because they have such big, thick leaves and they're kind of in the way.
Right. So they do. And so colchicum, although we call them autumn crocus, they're not a crocus. They do look like a big crocus, but they're not. Crocus are in the iris family, colchicum are in the lily family. So they're different, even though they look the same, which tells you why we shouldn't use common names, even though we can't pronounce the Latin ones most of the time. And they're both corms, not bulbs, you know, so that's so they're easily confused, except they have this very different habit. You get a lot of big, low to the ground foliage in spring, but no flower, then that fades away, that withers, and you cut it back or whatever. And then suddenly, any day now, at my place, I think any day now, you know, next weeks, month, whatever, I'm going to start seeing these purple or white, again, crocus-like, but the flowers have more petals or whatever the parts are, right? I mean, and there's more to them. It's not like an individual flower or two out of each corm. It's more like groups. Mm-hmm. And they're wonderful. And they are kind of, again, like a surprise because there's nothing there marking their place from late spring until bloom time.
Well, the big trick, I think, or the thing to think about horticulturally is what you plant them next to or with, because you want maybe hostas or something that comes up late in the spring, because you want to kind of disguise that foliage. It's not the nicest foliage. Well, it's not the best.
And it is. But it's definitely a lot of foliage. Yeah.
Right.
So, and that's one that you can only plant it in the early fall. You can only plant it or get it, order them around this time of year. And I saw a lot of places are already selling out. So it's something, if you want to get the colchicum, the so-called autumn crocus, you really have to do it like summer or right now at the latest in order to take advantage of their season. They're not something that's sold later on.
Right. And I did. That's the
So now you're charging me for that. Okay, put it on my bill.
I have some double white ones coming, I think.
Nice. Yeah. You know, we've all had successes and failures and so forth. And, you know, even again, without flooding and stuff. Do you have like one thing that you'd just like to quickly name as like your biggest bulb success, like one that you do really well with? Is there anything like that?
Huh.
Mine is Aranthus, the winter aconite, which was my least successful in the beginning. And I thought, what have I done? Why isn't it growing? And I mean, this goes back decades. And it was like I had, you know, two, and then I had three, and then I had four. And now I have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, because they love to, once they're happy, they self-sow themselves much better than when you plant the bulbs. The, you know, the success rate from those self-sowns is just so much better than when you put the bulbs in the ground. So now I have these mature swaths of them. So I'd say Aranthus is my most successful. I just wondered if you had one that you think, oh, we've done really well with those.
Well, you're going to have to help me with the pronunciation.
Oh, good luck with that.
Nectaroscordum?
Yeah, you got it. Nectaroscordum, right.
And it used to be Allium bulgaricum.
Exactly. And now it's Nectaroscordum siculum. Yes.
Right. Well, they're just happy all by themselves.
They are. And they are. That's a fun one.
Pop up in the place you didn't know. Because this is kind of a shady place, they don't usually have straight stems. They're like funny, like snakes. First they crawl along the ground, then they come up.
Oh, yeah. They like more sun to be erect and, you know, hold up those trusses of flowers. Yeah.
But there's another species that is growing here, and it used to be really expensive. I don't know if it still is, but it's Tripedale.
Tripedale. I wonder if it's pronounced Tripedale. I don't know. I'm just making that up.
See, I told you I didn't know it.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter. It wasn't a spoken language, botanical Latin, right?
Right,
we also have to just
dead,
say that.
All those humans.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen that?
It's yes.
Gorgeous.
Beautiful.
Oh, my gosh.
Right, beautiful. Okay, so that's another one. So I can't, you know, speaking of who has successes, failures, I can't grow crocus because of the animals. I mean, just forget about it. And tulips, similarly, I've sort of given up on because it was just always having to protect them and whatever, it was too much of a pain in the neck. So, crocus I don't do well with because they're just like candy for all the animals.
And there's actually quite a few fall blooming crocus.
Oh, and do you have any of those? Are you growing any of those?
Well, I do now.
Uh-oh, he's shopping, folks. Uh-oh.
I always wanted to grow crocus speciosus, which is sort of bluish and blooms in the fall, and I never have, but I will be this year. And I think I'm gonna try Sternbergia.
Sternbergia.
Ludia. Which I think that's called like autumn daffodil. It's a common name, I think, but it has yellow flowers, looks like a crocus. And that's another fall blooming. So you've got me into this whole fall blooming thing.
Oh, interesting. Okay, blame Margaret. Just go ahead, blame Margaret. Like I said, I can't grow the crocus, but and I even tried the Thomasinianus, the Tommies, the crocus. They're supposed to be the most animal resistant, and they were a disaster also. So for me, but generally speaking, those will do better. I just have a lot of very determined animals. Even if they don't eat them exactly, they knock their heads off and dig them up and things like that. So I gave up. But speaking of animals, you know, there are things, and I have like a list of, you know, there are sort of animal resistant bulbs, and some are even almost really animal proof, like the Narcissus, for instance, and the colchicum that we were just talking about. Really, nobody's going to mess with those. And I think the Oranthus, the winter aconite that I mentioned before, hyacinths, galanthus, the ornamental onions. You just mentioned some of those and their relatives.
Well, I also bought, I did this not because of you, actually, because of our discussion, but I love the allium, and they've been okay for the last few years, you know, coming back, but sometimes even those sort of don't because they're crowded out or something. And they have foliage a little bit before the flower, and the foliage then turns yellow, but I don't even see it because I've planted them among other things, and maybe that's why they sort of diminish in number because they're a little crowded. But I love the way they pop up, and I don't get the giant tall ones. They're just too outer. Well, I was going to say they're outer spacey, but those low big ones are outer spacey, and I like them for that. They're sort of right. Star Trek.
Right.
And they dry so well.
Right. I used to have like more of the which one is it that has the really firecrackery looking, I'm going to just blank on the name.
Yes,
and I also love Carotiviens, a Schubertii. It's Allium Schubertii that looks like fireworks. You know, and I used to love to dry the flower heads also. They make great dried flowers. And they peter out eventually. And Carotiviens, which has beautiful glaucous lobe blue leaves and pale pink globes, sort of lowish to the ground. I mean, I love both of those, but I don't find that they last forever. So I might be replacing some of those. And the little yellow Allium Molly, M-O-L-Y, did you ever grow that?
Yeah, and that didn't come back so well either, actually.
Yeah, I had it for many years, but then it finally also was lost. So that's one that I'm sort of thinking, it's just so cheerful to have something, just like the little narcissus, the little miniature narcissus and so forth. You know, that sort of front of the border, a little burst of bright yellow in the when spring's just coming on. It's just such a cheerful color and kind of goes with what's going on in springtime. So that's another one that I'm thinking.
Those are
of.
All some things that we love. And maybe need to replace or have more of because they did well. And you and I are both crazy for something that has to be planted in the fall, which are our martagan lilies.
Right. Which animals will eat. but the martagan lilies are beautiful. Yeah, European. And more natural looking, you know, pendant, you know, droop, the flowers hang down. And
yeah, little Turk's cap.
Yeah,
flowers really, along really tall pretty. Stems, very tall, like 3 feet at least.
Yeah. Some other things that animals just don't eat if people are interested, the glory of the snow, the Cyanodoxa, the Spanish bluebells, Hyacinthoides, Muscari is supposed to be pretty animal resistant, you know, not fully, but Siberian squill, the Scilla Siberica, Camassia, Fritillarias, the Aramurus, the foxtail lily. Have you ever grown any of those? Some can be like 5 feet tall. Those are incredible. I would like to try those, the foxtail lilies.
I tried those and they didn't work for me.
I want to try again. I haven't tried them in many years and I just want to try again. So, because they're just so dramatic, so fun. So we'll see. I might just buy, you know, a few, like three or five or something. and the trout lilies, erythroniums, they're animal resistant and native as well. There's various native ones around the country. So those are.
And
you
mentioned Camassias. I think there's like four or five North American species.
Yes. And a number of them are Western, you know, like west of the Cascade
Pacific
Mountains.
Northwest,
and so,
right.
Yeah. And. There, you know, I think there's one that's, you know, or from like, California, the Sierra Nevadas, et cetera. And there's a number, like a couple of species at least. But there is one, I think it's Celoides, that's like South Carolina to parts of Texas. And it goes up into like Western Pennsylvania and even into, I think, Wisconsin and Kansas in the Midwest, and I think into Ontario. So that's an interesting one. It's the only one that's sort of more Eastern. I think among the three or four, or however many natives there are. So again, not native everywhere and not particularly where we are, but still fun to look at.
And they have blue flowers?
Yes, I think so. I think so.
I think they all have from light blue to dark blue.
Yeah.
Except there is a white one, Sacagawea. It's a selection of Lectlinii, I think.
Yeah.
Gamacea Lectlinii.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's a Western one. Yeah. I don't want to run down our time. I don't want to run out of time before we get to, because we want to have time, save time to about dividing Narcissus at the end. But, you know, speaking of natives, I love to look on the website of the Pacific Bulb Society, pacificbulbsociety.org. That has great bulb references for any use, but it also talks about natives and so tells which ones are natives and so forth. So that's one fun reference for people. And in terms of native bulbs, the Erythronium, the trout lilies that we talked about, there's a couple species of those, a white flowered one. They're really eastern part of the country, eastern half or two thirds of the country. There is a western species, and once even specific to California, so worth looking into if an Erythronium is, if you're into native plants and you want to add some bulbs, some minor bulbs to your garden. And there's, again, the Northwest really seems to have some great ones, some gorgeous little bulbs, like they're all related to each other, I think, like Calochortus and Brodia and the Dicolostemma. There's a one that's called the firecracker flower that's like mm-hmm. red and yellow with yellow lips. I mean, that's just a wonderful, a cut flower farmer, a friend of mine grows that as a little tiny, wonderful cut flower addition to smaller bouquets. And it's just fabulous. So again, not native where I am, but a native to the United States. So some possibilities, but I want to ask you about the dividing so that we have some time for that, because
I was just going to say the most important thing is to know where they are. And fortunately, with that big patch that I'm going to be working on any minute now, of the Narcissus pseudo-Narcissus species, wild species, I know where they are because they're under the tree and there's a big patch. But if you don't mark those daffodils to dig up and divide now before they really start making lots of roots, then, you know, you're in trouble.
Like right now we couldn't tell where they were because they have no foliage, right?
Right.
So we have to go on memory or pictures, like you were smart.
Or tags.
Right, and tags and so forth.
Tags, but, if you're lucky enough that nobody steals them.
Right. But would this be the time when you would divide them when they're mm-hmm. so at bulb planting time, so to speak, you would also harvest some of your own and move them around?
Some of them might have some roots, but that's, you know, just short roots, but that's okay. So I dig them up, and if you've ever even purchased a daffodil that they sometimes call them noses, that has more than one
double nose,
that are attached to each other, you can pry those apart. And when you dig up yours, and if they have a few bulbs stuck together, you can pry those apart. But I'll dig them up, and it looks like sort of one daffodil, and it turns out it's six. So I just dig them up with a garden fork, pry them apart. You can let them dry if you need to, or just replant them right away. And they sometimes, frankly, they may rest a year. And not give you a big show, but in the second year, they really go gangbusters. And if your daffodils are slowing down, digging them up and dividing them is one way to get them going again. And you have 10, you'll have 100.
Yeah, because I mean, a lot of the ones that I planted when I first got here, you know, they're in much more shade than they were, because the woody plants adjacent have grown a lot, like what you were talking about earlier. And they need to be rescued, or, you know, I mean, obviously they're not doing anybody any harm. It's just that they're not performing, really. They send up greenery in the spring, and I let that fully develop and ripen. And usually around July 4th, I rake it off, you know, clean up around them when they fully have withered, the foliage has withered. But I'm not getting the flowers like I did years ago, to the degree that I did years ago. So. Yeah, I mean, I definitely need to do that. I may just do an experimental, you know, clump or two and see how it goes.
It will make them happier.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, you're going to pierce some bulbs because you're not going to know where exactly they are if you didn't mark them when they had all their foliage. I mean, if you didn't mark the perimeter exactly. Do you know what I mean? And that's
sure.
Okay. We can't.
It may not kill them, actually.
Right. And we just have to be okay about that because it's for the greater good, right?
Maybe go slow. And you mentioned cleaning up in July. We're saying divide them now, but you can divide them when they're dormant, really starting in July, I would say.
Uh-huh.
But this is sort of the end of the time you can dig them up and divide them.
Right.
As you said, the time you purchase dormant bulbs.
Right. So in the last minute or so, tell me, is there anything else on your wish list that I'm paying for now that is there anything else we didn't mention or that you're getting more of or
well,
haven't had before?
Trippadale, I'm going to get that.
You're going to keep calling it Trippadale, huh? I'm thinking it's
tripedally, nice,
but I don't know. You're right. Who knows?
Of course you're right. Why would it be called Trippadale? That sounds like, you know, a street in London or something. I can't believe it. That's
so you're going to get more of that. You're going to get that.
Oh, mm-hmm. Just one more maybe. Usually you want, that's one thing to say, buy enough.
Right.
You know,
don't skimp.
But in the case of the Trippadale, it's so spectacular. You can have just a couple, and it's tall and it's a big show and it's beautiful and it's even beautiful cut. But you mentioned Brodia, which I think changed its name to Tritolia.
Yeah, Tritolia, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, see, I'm mispronouncing.
No, I think either way, it doesn't matter. Again, it doesn't matter.
Well, the Brodia, I had that for years, and it has blue flowers, blooms a little late in the spring, and it's just easy and reliable until you put a paving stone on top of it.
Oh.
Which is that someone who shall remain nameless, because
paved
we're doing
it.
A little construction, it got a paving stone. Wait, and it may come back next year, but I think since I should get more of those because they did really well. That's one thing. If you've got something that's done really well,
repeat.
More.
Yeah. All right. Well, no paving stones on your bulbs, everybody, but go order some bulbs, everybody. So that's our message today, our dual message. Thanks, Ken, for making time. And I have a feeling I'm having a shopping binge a little later after we hang up. So
dangerous.
Thanks. All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Margaret.
And I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy bulb shopping and gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, offering 30 new seed varieties for 2024. Professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.